Welcome to the Wedding 101 podcast. Hello, my name is David Rothstein. This program was designed to be a helpful resource for both brides and grooms as well as wedding professionals. It was created to give listeners real insights from the top wedding professionals in the nation. Each new show features a wedding professional from a variety of different aspects of wedding planning: photographers, caterers, wedding planners, florists, venues, and many more. These interviews will give you lots of great ideas how to get the best results for your wedding. Wedding professionals can also learn from other wedding vendors. We hope you have hope you enjoy the program. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic, please let us know, and we hope you enjoy today's podcast. Our special guest today is Master Wedding Planner Anthony Navarro. And before we get started interviewing Anthony, we'd like to give you a little bit of some information and background about Anthony. Anthony Navarro has been planning, coordinating, and executing events for well over a decade. Growing up in a family of restaurateurs, knowing how to make people feel comfortable at any event is second nature to Anthony. A native to Chicago, Anthony has graduated from DePaul University and began working in a hotel and mastered the art of planning corporate meetings, social events, as well as weddings. Having learned how to be overly organized and ready for the best and the worst, working as a restaurant and catering event planner, Anthony's main goal has always been to plan a memorable and meaningful event for his clients. Starting Liven It Up events was a dream come true. He truly enjoys having the ability to work in a variety of distinctive spaces and crafting unique events. Anthony is also the co-founder of an organization called Stand Up, Business Professionals for Marriage Equality, and the author of The Business of Becoming a Wedding Planner. And we would like to invite, and we're happy to have Anthony Navarro on our program today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about one of the most challenging things that brides face, which is putting together a template of their schedule, how to put together an actual schedule that's going to work perfectly for them. So let's get started. What are some of the basic outline for a wedding schedule?
Sure. So I think the most important thing is, or the way that I always build a timeline that I think is successful for a wedding, is figuring out what time we're starting the ceremony. And then from there, sort of working backwards to figuring out what time hair and makeup needs to start, which then will lead into what time should your photographer come? What time should your personal flowers be delivered? What time do you need to be dressed? When do you need to get to the church or to the ceremony location? And then figuring out from there what time everything is going to happen after the ceremony. So cocktail hour into dinner and dancing. And of course, it's all just kind of varies depending on if you're getting married in a church or if you're getting married at your venue and how you're going to do those things. But that's always where I start, is what time is the ceremony? And then from figuring that part out, you can figure out, you know, the beginning of the day all the way till the end of the day.
And let's walk our way through a ceremony. Or an actual day of a wedding. Let's say there's a 3 o'clock wedding ceremony at a church.
Great.
How do we kind of evolve the rest of the schedule based on that?
Yep. So the way I look at it is figuring out the location of where everyone's going to be getting ready at, estimating that we want everybody there 30 minutes to 40 minutes before the actual service starts. So from there, I'll figure out and say, you know, maybe an hour before, or I'm sorry, half hour before we're supposed to leave the prep location, that's what time you need to be dressed. So back it up all the way to the beginning of the day, say 9 o'clock, hair and makeup starts, gets everybody dressed by say 1:15, 1:30, some photos happen, and then by 2 o'clock, everyone's on their way to the church for ceremony. 3 o'clock ceremony, figure an hour, photos afterwards, and then maybe your bus trolley takes you around town for some photo shots, and then we start cocktail hour at say 5:30 or 6, just depending on your venue and what time you want to get started.
And let's go through, in terms of the reception, how long is typically cocktails, dinner, and dancing?
Sure. So wedding receptions are typically anywhere from 5.5 to 6 hours is kind of how you look at it. So typically cocktail hour is an hour, maybe sometimes maybe an hour and 15 minutes, maybe an hour and a half, sort of depends on some of the other logistics. And then your dinner and dancing reception, that's normally about 5 hours on average. So you figure about an hour and a half for your dinner service, maybe for dancing between courses, maybe that's a little bit longer, but basically it's about an hour and a half for dinner service. And then a good, you know, 3 hours or so on the backside for lots of dancing and fun.
And one thing that...
Did I do the math right? I just had to go back and think about that. I think I did.
I think that worked out just fine. Okay. One thing that people don't realize is that dinner is... When people think of dinner, that's not when you sit down and the main course is served. Dinner starts as soon as they open up the doors to the ballroom. And that's really the beginning of your dinner hour. I think that's an important clarification.
It totally is. Because, I mean, that's your introductions. That's all of your speeches. It's the body of
your wedding, right?
Right. It's when all the, I call it the meat and potatoes, not what's being served, but what's happening at your wedding. That stuff, that's all happening then.
More often chicken and potatoes.
Yeah, that's
wedding chicken. One of the So we've got an hour for cocktails, and then people transition into another room usually.
Yep.
And a lot of times if they have the ceremony there, they'll have the ceremony in the main ballroom and then switch over to another room for cocktails. They'll turn over the room, which is an amazing thing to see. If you ever see it. Most brides and grooms never see it, but it's a remarkable thing to see it transform from one room to another,
It's organized chaos is what it is. It's just teams come in and they just swoop between the band, the floral, the catering. Everybody just comes through and just makes it happen in less than an hour.
And then voila, here's this like, poof. Nothing happened. Right. Yep. Yeah.
Here we go.
As Anthony said, it'd be an hour and a half, maybe sometimes 2 hours if you're adding some extra factors into it for dinner, and then 3 hours, 3.5 hours for all the dancing stuff.
Yeah.
When someone is considering adding more time or adjusting that type of framework, what are some of the factors that come into consideration when designing a little bit longer or shorter cocktails, dinner, or dancing?
Sure. So I think the way I'm always looking out for clients from a budget standpoint. And a lot of times, so if you're in a hotel or a venue where you're purchasing a liquor package for you, typically that's all done by the hour. So a lot of times they start you with a 4 hour bar package. So you figure an hour of that bar has got to go to your cocktail hour. And then you have, you know, a lot of times your dinner, wine service is included in there. And then you have about 3 hours on the backside. So say if you're starting your cocktail hour, say it's at 6:30. So 6:30 to 7:30, that's an hour of your bar. And then 7:30 to say 9 o'clock is all of the stuff that's happening at dinner. And then you've got that 3 hour bar package on the back end of the wedding. So that'll take you from like 9 to midnight. So if you want to add things in, or you want to go longer, or you're starting earlier, you just have to, I always, you know, tell couples, you just have to be mm-hmm. conscious of adding some of that. Cause then that's also going to add extra time to your bar. So it's going to be a little bit more. The band, depending on how long they've booked the band for, I mean, that's going to extend some time. And then also, if you're extending on the back end, sometimes you have to pay a little bit more for your strike teams to come a little bit later. So lighting, floral, some of that might be a little bit more. So
does the number of guests affect how long you should make the schedule? Do you have to allow for extra time, some time like moving between areas or serving?
So I think what really determines that is how complex everything is. And what I mean by that is how many speeches, how are we doing introductions or not? Like the wedding, a wedding I have coming up, there's a lot that we're doing, and we are doing East Coast style. So we're dancing between courses. Right. But there were certain things that were not important to the bride and groom, and we just decided to not do them. So we're not doing a cake cutting. We're not introducing the entire wedding party. We're just sort of trimming it down, because what's more important to them is have those people speak at the wedding than it was to do some of the other sort of more traditional things. And with that, they really just wanted more dancing time on the backside of the wedding, towards the end of the wedding. And we were... On paper, it looks like it's going to work. As long as those speeches stay to time, I think we're going to be in good shape.
It's great, because nowadays, I think couples are access to a lot more information that they don't have to introduce their whole giant bridal party. They don't have to do a big formal cake cutting. They don't have to do a lot of these things that they said, oh, well, of course you have to do these things. Well, maybe we don't have to, you know?
You're totally right.
And so I think that is giving brides and grooms a lot more flexibility, and giving planners and all the other vendors a lot more opportunities, and mainly the most important thing is the bride can get to the things that they want to get to faster, and eliminate some of those things that they feel are obligatory or used to be obligatory.
Right. I mean, you're totally right. I think it's always prioritizing. So what's the most important thing for you and figuring out what that is and then do those things and then everything else, like whether it happens or not, that's totally up to you. I always say, depending on where, you know, where the wedding is at and how that all works, is like people go to a wedding, mm-hmm. they have an expectation, right? So they understand and they know they're going to watch a ceremony. They're going to have hors d'oeuvres. They're going to sit down and do some sort of dinner. And then there's going to be dancing. As long as you have those sort of elements in and then you're sprinkling a little bit of wedding throughout, that traditional kind of stuff, however else the rest comes together, it's going to work. It will work. It's just, you know, you may hear, you know, Aunt Sally from, you know, she might tell you there was no cake. But I mean, really, it's okay because maybe you did an ice cream station or you did a donut station. And that is, if that's what you're really into, that's what you should do.
Yeah. And that's really a big thing that I really, really enjoy about weddings now is that people really want to make their weddings 100% authentic. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different ways of doing them now. As you mentioned, a few different things, and it's great. And when you're working with creative vendors that are open to different ideas, and you've got a great wedding planner, you know, like you, that can really introduce some different ideas. But what if we did it this way? We can still reach those same goals. But what if we tried this way, took this out, added this over here? Then you can get to it much easier. So be creative and be yourself. And if you get some ideas that you like, use them, but only use them if they fit into who you guys are and what's important to you.
Exactly.
Now, one of the biggest factors in terms of the reception is the difference between dancing between choruses and then what's called Midwest style. Maybe you can explain those two things.
Sure. So so dancing between choruses, or East Coast style, as a lot of people refer to it, it's where, so let's just say no matter where the ceremony happens or how that works, after cocktail hour, all of the guests are welcome into the ballroom and the band is normally playing lively, upbeat music, mm-hmm. encouraging the guests to make their way to the dance floor. And then in between, you know, songs, we'll introduce the wedding party and the bride and groom or the couple into the room. And then when they come in, typically we have them do their first dance right away. And then we do a short dance set. And then maybe a few speeches, and then we start dinner. And then we'll interrupt again with a couple other speeches, and then we'll do another dance set. The idea is that it gives your guests a time. So it's not like you're just going to sit down and go all the way through dinner. It gets the guests kind of up and moving and dancing, and it gives the band a chance to kind of get the room going. And typically you do that. You know, you do a short dance set in between each course. The other thing from a total logistics point of view that no one really ever looks or thinks about, it's a great way for the catering team or the hotel staff to come in, clear the tables, because everybody's on the dance floor. They can clear all the plates really fast. Mm-hmm. And as soon as everybody sits down, they can begin service again. So there's, you know, there's some really nice things to do with that. Midwestern style is where everybody kind of, you know, gets welcomed into the room after cocktail hour. And then instead of there being sort of this lively kind of entrance, there's, you know, nice music or upbeat music, but it's not encouraging people to dance. They sit down, introductions happen, and then maybe there's a couple toasts, and then we go through dinner. And the only thing that kind of interrupts during dinner is some speeches from maybe like the maid of honor, the best man, or parents. And then all of the dancing starts after dinner.
Yeah, and also one of the other advantages for that is it's also a bit of an insurance policy, because you've taken care of all the business aspects of the wedding during dinner, including if somebody's toast runs long, it really doesn't matter as much because people have been up and dancing already,
right.
And if the food takes longer, they can say, play two more, and then everybody's on the dance floor.
Right.
They don't notice people sitting there.
Right.
So it really keeps that momentum going, like you said.
It does. It's a different a wedding when you're doing East Coast style has a different feel to it than a Midwest style. The only thing that I would warn people is if their guests who are coming to the wedding maybe aren't accustomed to that, and they really want to do that East Coast style, that dancing between courses, is maybe start to prep the immediate family and let them know this is how you're going to do it, so that when it starts happening, people aren't totally thrown off like, oh my gosh, why are we dancing? We just had salad. What are we doing? You know, this way it kind of gets them ready, because I've done that before with clients who are from the Midwest and they've never been to a wedding like that, but the couple really wanted to do that. And they started with their parents, they went on to their cousins, to their aunts and uncles at holidays and gatherings, and really got them ready for that. And I think it worked really well for the wedding. It really helped kind of get everybody out of their seats, and people weren't looking like, oh, I don't understand what's happening. So,
and another way to clarify that too is if you have a really strong MC who can kind of, and right now, ladies and gentlemen, while you're waiting for a main course, I'd like to invite you to please join us for dancing.
Yes.
So that way it's very clear, because if a band or a DJ doesn't really understand that and they just out of nowhere start playing these dance songs, that's where I think it can be a little confusing.
Yes.
But I think if you do have a really experienced band leader or MC who can take care of clarifying that, and now we have this, and now we have that, and now that really is going to help guide them. Because with our band, we've played it for people that have never seen a live band before.
Sure.
And with a little bit of clarity, that can really be helpful. There's also a video on this that you guys may find helpful too. It's on our website, drsmusic.com. Click on where it says weddings, and there's a whole 4-minute video kind of explaining this as well. So that will hopefully help clarify some of the advantages and kind of help enhance what Anthony was talking about with those two different options.
I've watched your video. It's very helpful.
Oh, thanks.
It's very great.
Thanks. It's a very common thing that people seem to get confused by a lot. But let's talk about some of the things that cause a schedule to run behind, and maybe some ways of how they can be prevented if
sure.
we can.
So I think the number one thing that makes that makes schedules run behind are long toasts. So when people give really long-winded speeches, and what I always recommend telling couples is tell those people who you want to speak at the wedding to prepare something that's maybe 3 to 5 minutes, knowing that if they're kind of afraid to speak in public, it might be closer to the 3 to 5, and then others who are little more long-winded will be 7 to maybe 10 minutes. But when you get over that, time, that's what really can help slow things down. The other thing is if there's too many speeches or too much that has to happen in a short amount of time. So I think, again, prioritizing what's really important to have at the wedding. Is it more dancing time? Is it your cake cutting? Is it have a lot of people in your family and friends speak? Whatever that is, prioritize that. And then, you know, focus the most time around that. And then, you know, kind of minimize and shrink the other sides of that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to kind of get what you want to get to.
Yeah.
Let's say a couple just got engaged and now they're really excited. They put it on Facebook. They've called all their friends. They've had their OMG moment and everything like that. Now they have to get down to the nitty-gritty of, like, let's actually make this happen. What is the advantage of hiring a wedding planner?
Sure. So I think what I do with my couples, and I just kind of know that this is the most helpful piece of it, is the first thing we do is figure out all of the things they want for their wedding. So what kind of venue, what kind of food, a band or a DJ, because there's a difference in the type of wedding that we're having. A little bit on the floral, how important is photography? How important do you need, you know, video? We go through everything. We figure that all out. Then we lay it all out on paper and I show them what it's going to cost.
Okay.
And to me, that budget really becomes the blueprint and how to build and construct the wedding that they want. So for instance, last week I have a new couple who what's really important to them is having a very unique venue, a band, and a really good bar, which a lot of times that's really like the three key components to a wedding.
Right.
I mean, in my opinion, good food too.
Good person to marry would be helpful.
Well, and that's always good too. That's the marriage, the wedding.
Very underrated part of the planning process, having a fiance, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right.
You know, okay.
But the but that's kind of where we start. And we, you know, we're going to kind of scale back in some other places because they're going to splurge on the band and on the venue, and they're going to do a really good bar package. So it's figuring out what's, again, prioritizing what's really important to you, putting that together, that budget together, and then that kind of creates the blueprint on how to move forward in the planning process. And for me, that is, I know, the number one thing that I do for clients right away is set them up with that, and then that gives us the roadmap on how to build their wedding.
And there are so many different venues, so many different floral arrangements, so many different types of music options and things. Would you recommend couples to sit down before they even go to any vendors and talk about what kind of vision they want to have for their wedding, what kind of feel they want to have before it's just like looking, I want to go buy a house. And then you're looking at townhouses in the suburbs and high rises and, you know, having a general idea, a vision of what you kind of want to have can really help you kind of narrow down what you want and what you're, so you're not crazy running around with your, you know, with like a chicken with its head cut off, just trying to, what about this? Then you can really get confused. Because weddings are, people are buying a lot of stuff they never bought before.
Correct.
So that's where a really experienced planner can really help a lot.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think the other thing just to add on, I think it's always important to have that dialogue from the get-go. But I also think it's important to know that sometimes what you think you want isn't exactly what you're going to get. So for instance, I've had a couple one time who they were totally, they wanted an urban loft. We looked at every single urban loft we could get our hands on that would work in their budget. And it just wasn't them. They realized they weren't urban lofty kind of people. We wound up in a ballroom in a hotel, which is totally fine. So sometimes when you think, you know, when you sit down and you kind of have those early conversations, you think you're going to go one way and you go the other, that's totally okay too.
And what are some tips for dealing with couples that have parents and maybe have another idea? Maybe the parents are paying for it and they want to superimpose their thoughts onto what the wedding should be like over them.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
So I think with a lot of the couples that we work with, the parents are paying for the weddings. I think there is just a lot of kind of open dialogue and open conversation from the get-go and saying, we're not going to be at a fancy schmancy hotel, or we're not going to be right downtown. We want to be in this sort of more modern urban place. And I think what just helps is having the parents part of the process and letting them go on the venue tours and let them see it and see that it's not, you know, it's not just some warehouse building where they're opening a sliding door and they're saying, we're going to rent this out. And, you know, this is now a wedding. When they go and they kind of experience it and mm-hmm. they walk through, they really get to see that this is, it could be a wedding. So I think that's the way, is sort of bringing them in, have them be involved in some of the important parts, and then, you know, let them help make the decisions. Let them help be a part
be
of that
involved,
process.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing sometimes, because I've had couples sit down at my place and they love everything and everything's great, and then they go home to the parents who were not here for the meeting, and they look at the number and they go, oh no, let's just do this, and they miss out on all the other stuff. So it's if you have your parents involved in the decision process, feel free to bring them to your photographer, bring them to the, as you said, the venue tours or your orchestra.
And all of the vendor, yeah. All those vendor meetings. It's really important, because I think mm-hmm. like those of us who have been in the industry a long time, and that
right.
We've done a lot of weddings. We have a lot of experience. We want to share that knowledge with the couples that we're working with and their families. I think it's better for everybody to sort of understand and know that there's a reason why you suggested, you know, the package that you're, you know, suggesting, because it's going to give them the wedding and that sort of vision that they have for the night. So I think it's really important to do that. Sometimes it could be too many cooks in the kitchen, but
right.
I think, you know, if you're having your parents sort of really want to be a part of the process and learn more, I think a lot of times in those vendor meetings, there's a lot of education and we're learning about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to bring them there and have them there.
And sometimes parents also are basing things off when they got married.
Yes.
30, 40 years ago, which is a completely different world now.
Yes.
So whose wedding is it anyway? A little bit, you know?
Yes.
It's a little bit tricky, but, and also a lot of parents will just give them X amount of dollars and you can do whatever you'd like with it and stuff like that too. So that's another thing.
You're correct.
What are some of the biggest mistakes couples make when putting together, let's go back to the actual schedule.
When they're
putting together the schedule, what mistakes, is it underestimating the amount of time, or what are the things that you see over and over again people messing up with?
Yeah, so I think it is underestimating how much time things take on the wedding day. So all of the timelines that I do for wedding days are always, there's always a 15 to a, you know, 15 minute to a half hour buffer depending on what's happening. And I think people don't realize just how much longer it takes. Even like little things like getting dressed. If you're putting on a tuxedo, it's a few extra steps. Mm-hmm. Wedding dresses. I mean, it's not always just a slip, you know, an easy, you know, quick pull in. Sometimes there's lots of lacing and buttoning and it just takes time. And then I guess for me, I don't ever want people to be rushed on their wedding day. I want them to really embrace it and enjoy it. And I think that's the number one thing that I see people, you know, kind of come back to me and say, why do we need this much time? And it's like, we may not need it, but it's just there to have that buffer. So.
And when working with other wedding vendors, how do you make sure that everybody's on the same page at the same time and being in the right place?
Sure. So you mean at a wedding?
At an actual wedding. Yeah.
So what I always do is before we open the doors to the reception, I always gather all of the sort of the leader of the vendor teams mm-hmm. that are at the wedding. So the band leader, the captain from the catering team, photo video teams, just bringing everybody together and going through the timeline one more time. So like, you know, by every 5 minutes, we're going to bring guests in, we're going to do wine and champagne service, we're going to do introductions and just take them through so we're all on the same page. Because every now and then, a couple might say to the band leader, hey, I want you to sing this song, and in my notes, it's wrong. And then this way, it gives us a chance to cross-check that and then double-check that with the couple. I do that every wedding, and I think that it's the most important thing because it kind of brings us all together so we're all on the same page and we all then become, you know, this one big operating team for that wedding, which
Absolutely.
Is so important.
Because all the vendors need to understand that every piece of the wedding affects the other piece.
It does.
It's not, these are not independent events.
It's not.
You can't just make an announcement without the photographer being there or having the photographer just run off and go. So,
or making sure we're introducing the father-daughter dance, making sure that the dad is in the room. That's so important.
Types of things. And even if you'll never work with these vendors again, that moment of the actual wedding, you have to be this incredible team together.
Yes.
And you really have to do whatever it takes. And that's why having, you know, a really great planner like Anthony is going to be a big advantage to your wedding. So, one of the things that the brides kind of get intimidated by, the number of different wedding planners or vendors that are out there in general, maybe you can talk about some of the ways of figuring out what makes a planner a great planner. And there's just a lot of discount people that come in incredibly cheap prices, but not
sure.
necessarily the best results. So what are the factors that they should be looking for when deciding on a planner?
So I think for me, what's always important, and I always stress to people hiring me, is I explain to them that this is before I was a planner, I have a hospitality background. So I used to work in a hotel. I used to be in the back in the kitchen, kind of running things from that side. I used to work as an off-premise caterer. So I sort of understand operationally how things work. So the logistics of the event, the wedding itself, the actual dinner and dancing reception, I know. And then it's also just how you're presenting yourself and how you stay organized. I a lot of times show people sort of our planning templates and our planning guides and how that mm-hmm. that works, and how a lot of that we use maybe internally that they don't even see. But it's just all of these different checklists that we keep ourselves organized for them to help make things kind of go through. The other thing too is, I mean, it's, you know, reviews from past clients. So looking at review sites and just seeing those reviews and hearing what those clients, those testimonials are, I mean, that really just speaks volumes. And I know for us, that is, it's really important to us to maintain those and keep those at a high level, because you're only as good as your last event. So to you know, have that philosophy and kind of going into it every weekend, we have to outdo ourselves from the weekend before. So that's really how we work. And I think it's important for couples to know, you know, there are a lot of pros out there and you just got to be able to find them. And I think those are a couple key ways to look at, to look for them.
And personality is certainly a big thing too. Because
personality is great. Yeah, 'cause I'm around a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to have to work with me for a year or so. And then I'm with you on the day of the wedding. So you kind of have to like me. Yeah. If you don't like me,
what's
it's
not
going to
like,
work.
Right? Anthony, well, you know. I've worked with you many times and you're enthusiastic. And I think people that really understand that it is your wedding,
yes,
and you're there to serve them, and that's a really great thing. There's no ego working with Anthony, and it's all about let's all create something amazing as a team, and let's get the best results for you.
You got it.
And I think that's one of your biggest biggest factors that I really enjoy working about.
Well, thank you so much. That's very nice of you.
Absolutely. Is there a what exactly is a day of planner, and how is it different than a regular wedding planner?
Yeah, so there's a lot of conversation in the wedding planning world right now about day of coordinators versus just helping couples plan. So day of planners typically are the term is just a little antiquated because it's really just not day of coordination or day of planning anymore. It really is more like month of coordination, where at least you're doing a timeline meeting, you're doing a little bit of, you know, maybe you're doing a walkthrough at the venue with the couple and then confirming with all of the vendors, sending out timeline. It's really more of like the event logistics. You're not really designing, you're not really coordinating with the band directly from the kind of the get-go. Mm-hmm. It's really more of kind of coming in and taking what the client has planned and helping them execute their vision versus planning is more, you know, where we're starting from the beginning. We're putting the budget together. We're putting the vision together. We're figuring out the venue, the food, the music, the what's the best style photographer for them. What does the stationery look like? What does the lighting in the room look like? It's really more, much more involved. So there's couples out there who really want to just plan their wedding on their own, which is totally fine. I think the one thing I should say, though, is that at least with me, the way that I work is even if I'm working with a couple, you know, more on that full service planning level, it ultimately is always their wedding. All I'm doing throughout the process is bringing ideas and bringing my experience and bringing my background to the table and help guiding them. But ultimately, it's their decision. So they're going to pick the flowers they want. They're going to pick the band that they want. They're going to pick the photographer they want. I'm just bringing the options to the table for them to kind of see, you know, who might fit with what they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really a great thing because, once again, it's whose wedding is it anyway? It comes back to that again. But it's also, I think, really good to trust who you hire and hire who you trust.
Yes.
So when you hire certain vendors, really rely on their expertise. And just like you'd go to your doctor, you wouldn't, oh, my elbow hurts over here. Well, I saw this thing on this website. I don't really agree. I know you went to Harvard for medical school, but I saw this thing on this website. And so it's really important to really tap into people's experience.
Yes.
And be like, well, okay, this guy's done 2,500 weddings. I think I'll listen to give him a little more weight than my Uncle Larry, who saw this reality show and thought that was the coolest thing. So
I agree.
I think that's really important. And having a great wedding planner like Anthony can help tie everything all together.
Well, and I think just on that, you know, just to say that, it's a great team. You know, it's assembling your dream team. You know, it's assembling that great band, the great mm-hmm. band leader like yourself, the photographer, your floral team, your venue team, catering team, everyone. I think it goes with everybody. Is that, to right. me, That's how I would plan my wedding. As I would work with the people who I trusted, liked what they were selling, liked their product, and then got along with. Because that's like a recipe for a great party. So
yeah, and just like your grandparents' restaurant, and with all the crazy yes. Italian cooking, it's about putting together a great recipe, buying the best ingredients you possibly can, and then you make this great dish and you share it with everybody.
You
right?
got it. That's exactly right. That's the family secret, David.
that's the missing here. Okay. Uh-huh. That's fantastic because that's really what it is.
Yeah,
it's really what everybody is. That's make something great. You know?
You're right.
And lastly, before we go, how do you basically figure out what the costs are going to be in terms of setting up What do you have a set rate you do, or are there factors that come to consideration, not just for you, but in general with wedding planners?
Yeah. So I think the way a lot of people are operating from now these days, at least with us, is, you know, we operate from like three different package levels. So we have an idea on pricing and what those include. But a lot of what we're doing today is really a la carte. So it's figuring out sort of these base packages and then adding services for clients based on what they think that they're going to need some help with. So they may, you know, maybe they don't want full service planning, but they need more than just day of planning. So they kind of fall somewhere in the middle. And we kind of custom create a package based on, you know, based on their needs. I'm a big, you know, I'm a big believer in only charging for what people really need. There's no reason to overcharge people or eat up too much of their budget just because I want a, you know, a higher paycheck. That doesn't make any sense. It never has. So I'm always really about assessing the needs of the client, figuring out what's really important that they feel like they're going to need help with, and then only charging them for that. So
One last question that just popped into my head here. In terms of the setup for the priorities for the wedding. I mean, is it obviously the venue? You got to have that first of all.
Yep.
And then from there, is there a certain a general hierarchy in terms of things that you want to get? Or should, if someone sees this great florist and they just book that, and then do they go back and get some of the bigger things? Is there a general strategy for putting that together, or is it just kind of as things come?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the way I always look at it, especially in our market, just because things book out pretty far in advance. It's always venue to get your date. And then I always feel like the next kind of priority things that people need to be thinking about is music, photography, floral decor, catering, and then video. So it's kind of like those like bigger services, because those are the things that are happening at your reception or throughout the day. Everything else doesn't book out as far. So you can kind of, you know, kind of scale back on having to do those things immediately. But like, as you know, even a couple of weeks ago, I emailed you for a client who's getting married next June, and you were already booked. You had, you know, you were already at your capacity. So I know priority wise, most important thing is to get some of those bigger elements booked first. Hair and makeup, your wedding cake, those things can kind of come a little bit later in the planning process.
Great. Well, thank you so much to Anthony. We really appreciate you being a guest on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
And hopefully all of you have learned a lot about wedding templates and wedding schedules, how to put one together, how to put together a budget, and the advantages of having a wedding planner. So I certainly learned a lot during the show. So thanks for your insights there. And I highly encourage all of you who are recently engaged and planning your upcoming wedding to contact Anthony. You can reach him at 773-727-4929. Their website is liveinitup.com. That's liveinitup.com. You can email Anthony, which is anthony@liveinitup.com, or find him on Twitter and Instagram @liveinitup. So thanks so much to Anthony. Hope all of you have enjoyed the program. Once again, you've listened to the Wedding 101 podcast. You can listen to this show, as well as all the other shows we've done, on our website, drsmusic.com. We also have a great live music company, in case you are looking for some great music. We'd love to work with you. You can reach us at 773-244-1239. And the aforementioned website, drsmusic.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And be sure to tune in for more upcoming shows on the Wedding 101 podcast. And we look forward to seeing you at your amazing wedding coming up soon. Thank you.
Ooh, got the show about the weddings. There's a show about it. Got the show about the weddings. So you